Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
In the morning, 720 WGN. It is the Steve Cochran Show. Fall is in the air. Great time for Chicago sports.
It is.
Cubs are playing well. Blackhawks season's almost kicking off.
Do you realize the Blackhawks will have a Blackhawks game in less than 2 weeks?
Yes.
On the air?
Yes.
Preseason game. They start training camp. Their first practice is Friday. I believe the players will be reporting tomorrow. And they painted the ice yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
At the United Center.
Was it acrylics?
I'm not
or spray paint?
I'm not sure what kind of paint they actually used for that.
Were you there? Did you see them doing it?
No, I was not. I've seen the video of it.
So we're less than two weeks away or just over 2 weeks away?
We are for the first game,
yeah.
And right here on WGN will be next Tuesday, actually.
Yes.
Tuesday the 19th.
Aren't you excited?
In Columbus. And then the first home game is a week from tomorrow.
Oh, a week from tomorrow already.
Yeah, preseason.
Oh, preseason.
Preseason
okay.
game.
Okay.
The Red Wings come in.
Because we're kicking it. We have a special 1,000th show for the Steve Cochran Show at the Blackhawk store coming up in October.
Oh, you weren't supposed to say that.
Oh, all right. Should I drop it?
Yep.
Okay. Ready?
So,
I heard it.
Where? Oh, I didn't hear it.
No, you guys didn't hear
that. No.
And Lou Manfredini will be at the United Center on Saturday
when
they hit the training camp festival.
Yes, and I think John Williams is going to be there as well for part of his show.
You sure?
Stop. Come on. Stop making me second guess myself. But yeah, very exciting time. Also exciting for the Bears and Brian Urlacher.
He is on the list of first time eligibles for the Hall of Fame. You know, the Bears have more Hall of Famers in the Pro Football Hall of Fame than any other franchise, which makes sense. Basically, they started the league.
Yeah.
But I think they have 26 Hall of Famers. So mm-hmm. he would be number 27. He'll get in. I would assume he'll get in. First time, so we'll see that this they do the election, they whittle the list down, mm-hmm. and then they actually do the election the day before. I think it's the day before the Super Bowl. They have a meeting at the site of the Super Bowl, which is Minneapolis this year, and then they elect the Hall of Famers, announce the class.
Do you get to go to the meeting?
No, I will not be in the meeting.
You have to imagine that Brian Urlacher is going to make it. I mean, he's such a great player. I mean, he's a good guy off the field, too. I mean, do they take into account those things off the field as much as they do on the field, or is it just basically what you do
on the field? Well, I think it's basically their performance on the field. And there's some, you know, it's an interesting question, Steve, because one of the other first-year eligible players is Ray Lewis, who was a great player. But
had some off-the-field antics.
Certainly had some off-the-field issues that, and you wonder if that will affect it. So
I think
so we'll
very
see.
Well-deserving. I would vote him in.
Urlacher? Oh, absolutely.
Not being biased, of course.
No. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
It's a question whether he gets in next year. I don't think it's much of a question. I think he'll get in first time, but we'll see.
So is he? So the next year he'd be renominated again automatically?
Yeah, you stay on the list for X number of years.
For how long till they knock you off?
Well, I mean,
if you're a Susan Lucci,
he won't.
Yeah. No, he'll get in.
He won't go.
He'll get in. Yeah. Sure.
Can you imagine Susan Lucci?
Susan Lucci's
like,
I'm nominated
she's on the
for the Hall
ballot
of Fame
this year. No, people just waking up are going to
be
really.
Maybe she'd get
confused.
In there. They're
exactly right. Wait, what was her deal? Was she was nominated 12
Emmys.
Times? I know not for the Hall of Fame, but I mean, nominated 12 times and got in on the 13th.
I don't know if she ever did.
Yeah, she did.
She did win.
She won one.
Yeah,
but at that point, it was like anticlimactic. You know, it was like that Paul Newman was nominated how many times for an Academy Award and won for one of the last movies he ever made, The Color of Money.
It was Lucci,
didn't show up for the ceremony.
A wide receiver for the Raiders is.
No. That's. No, Susan Lucci was not a wide receiver for the Raiders.
No, but Erica Kane was.
Right.
Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
5 million people in Florida without power. The Keys are really an unbelievable disaster zone. Places you don't normally talk about unless you're from that area or visit that area. Big Pine Key, places like that, are really, really devastated. When those initial pictures came out after Irma hit, and we were talking about the island of Barbuda losing 95% of its structures to at least some damage, if not complete destruction. That's the kind of damage you're looking at Big Pine Key. And certainly Key West is a mess. And folks who have lived there their whole lives say they've never seen anything like it. Obviously because it's not an easy place to get to, getting them food, getting them water, getting them police protection, keeping people from becoming lawless bands of thugs. It's all a problem. You also have wildlife that is washed ashore. They're confused. I don't think you need confused gators or crocs or whatever else might be in the neighborhood. Boats flying around from one house to another. A boat ends up in your yard that's not your boat. That's a problem. And the water that is there that is not where it's supposed to be is similar to the Houston problem, where it's really dangerous water filled with pieces of houses and various other things. It's really remarkable the death toll's not higher.
No kidding. So no fuel, no electricity, no running water, and no cell service for most of the Keys.
Right.
That's going to take, what would you guesstimate, months and months to rebuild?
I don't know. You know, I keep hearing that. I keep hearing that, but it's remarkable how fast people recover. Now, there you would think, sure, months make sense. Mm-hmm. But considering where it is and the amount of attention that's been paid to it, that's the other thing. We haven't talked about Houston in a week. Houston's got a tremendous amount of trouble still.
Oh, big time. Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing the death toll wasn't higher there. I thought when the waters receded in Houston, we would be talking about hundreds of people dead. And the rescues there sold. You know, you're never going to know the people's names in Houston. You're never going to know the people's names in Florida that lay their own lives on the line to go out and help folks. Mm-hmm.
The situation in the Keys is still fluid. They're still doing the initial search and recovery.
Right. House
so
by house.
They don't even know yet if there are dead people in some of those homes.
And it's house by house, and they're doing the Katrina method, you know, where you go through and you put an X on a house, or there's coding that tells people that you've already gone through. Every house takes at least 15 or 20 minutes to go through. So it's far from over. And so what we find, right? We find that when the wind stop and the rain stop and the sun comes out again, that's when you start to get a view of how bad it was. It's amazing, amazing that people live through that. There was one woman that was profiled a couple of nights ago that stayed to take care of her neighbor's cat.
Oh, jeez.
And her house was destroyed.
Yeah.
The neighbor's house where she was taking care of the cat was not, but was significantly damaged. Kenny Chesney, I didn't know this. Kenny Chesney's got a house on, I think it's on St. Martin. Mm-hmm. And he was back in the States, but he had 17 people that, you know, he gave his code to so they could get into his house to stay protected. There was so much damage to his house, and you can imagine it's probably a nice place. Mm-hmm. The 17 people and like four dogs all hid in his laundry room and had a couple of mattresses that they pulled off beds that they were holding against the door and pulled a shop vac in to take the water out while they still had power.
God. It's unbelievable.
Did you see in the Keys how powerful the storm surge was? It actually scoured the highway pavement off of the roads.
Yeah, incredible.
And, the pavement.
And weird, too, with the wind. They're talking about never seeing damage like this, where houses were hollowed out like a piece of fruit.
Yeah.
Like the frame around the house somehow was standing, but the interior of the house was gone.
It's like a tornado. You know how one wall will fall?
I don't understand how that... Like, in some cases, obviously there was a break, but it looks like four walls are standing in the middle of the house is gone.
Just got hollowed out, yeah.
So, really incredible. Upstate, Bradenton's a mess. Jacksonville, Florida still has a lot of flood issues. Atlanta got whacked pretty hard yesterday, huh?
Yeah, with the rains.
And I heard some winds at 60 and 70. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, Irma was a bitch.
Right.
Irma is now no more, but part of history. And there is a lot of work to do and a lot of money to be spent. Let's hear the rest of the top six here. Luis Gutierrez lost his mind temporarily, and he has no ground to stand on here. Congressman Gutierrez, very upset over DACA, which is understandable considering his heritage, considering his constituency, and considering who he is. But he called out Chief of Staff John Kelly, General John Kelly, and called him a disgrace to his uniform, called him a liar, called him a hypocrite, and now is refusing to apologize. You have no stand on how you feel Donald Trump is behaving and how childish you claim Donald Trump is. If you make a tremendous mistake like this, and don't take it back. Now, honestly, with what General John Kelly's been through in his life and 50 years of service to this country and losing his own son, I don't think he spends a lot of time losing sleep over Luis Gutierrez. But having said that, the honorable thing to do here is to take a step back and say, I was upset, I shouldn't have said it, and I apologize. And if you don't, Congressman, you're Donald Trump.
Right, remember
the guy that never apologized.
Gutierrez was the one with the whole Khazir Khan with the Gold Star father,
right,
who was just lambasting, for right or wrong, President Trump and the Trump administration for the Khazir Khan situation, if you will.
And let's be clear. General John Kelly is the chief of staff to the President of the United States. He is doing his job in the same way he did his job for the past 50 years in uniform. And that is, he is serving his country, and in this case, serving the commander-in-chief. And you don't know what's been said behind closed doors. You don't know that John Kelly wasn't saying to the president, do not stand up in Charlottesville and say this. Do not say this about DACA. He's still the president. He can do what he wants. So Gutierrez couldn't be more out of line, and frankly, is embarrassing to the state of Illinois. And we got enough problems. So Congressman, stand down. You should be better than that. Next, Trump administration considering reducing the number of refugees admitted to the U.S. over the next year to below 50,000 to be the lowest number since 1980. The Supreme Court on Tuesday temporarily allowed the administration to bar about 24,000 people from entering. This goes all the way back. Seems like 10 years ago. But you remember the travel ban?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like February. The Supreme Court says for now it's okay with its limits that were placed by other courts on it. The justice also suspended Texas redistricting while they consider an appeal. This is a big case because the gerrymandering issue in Illinois is huge, and this could be a bad day for Mike Madigan. And you know what a fan I am of Mike Madigan. Next. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle on Tuesday got some work to do, her words, to prevent the controversial soda tax from being repealed. An acknowledgement that came a day before opponents filed a measure to erase it from the books. You can run all the commercials you want, and we certainly appreciate the business. The public does not want this.
Not at all. Nobody wants this. There's signs in stores now from store owners. And how many people have we interviewed who said, I'm going to Will County or DuPage
right.
County or Lake County? She doesn't think that the opponents have the 9 votes needed to suspend the tax. So she might take an immediate vote on repealing the tax to show, hey, you know what, you don't have the votes. But I'm telling you, if 9 commissioners step forward, I can't think of anyone besides the commissioners who think this is a really good idea.
Yeah, and I need to, Dave, you and I have talked about this. We're going to find Mike Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, and we're going to take him aside, and we're going to have an intervention. And we're going to say, Mike, who forced you to drink a soda pop
happened?
When you were young? What
nice.
Happened? Why does soda pop make you so angry?
To fall back on the obese...
But this is what he did in New York. This is what he did in New York, and New Yorkers went nuts over this and said, don't tell me how to raise my kid. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to drink and what to eat.
Right.
We got bigger problems. Deal with other stuff that matters. Is this country too fat? Of course it is. But the fact of the matter is you're not going to legislate people into shape.
Well, and to fall back on the hypocrisy of it, to fall back on, well, we don't want our kids to be overweight, so we should tax adults on buying soda pop or anything, any sweetened beverage. Why not tax ice cream or cookies?
Yeah, and video games, because that's what kids are doing. They're sitting inside playing video games all day.
To fall back on that as an excuse, though, and spend millions of dollars on ads in Chicago.
You tax a couch. You got to start taxing couches.
Exactly. I could see that.
It's a couch tax. You got to tax a couch. You know, you take away the place to sit, millennials left to go outside.
And then you tax mattresses, and oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, for years, I've said, you take their phones, and you attach them to the back of the car, and you go very slowly through the neighborhood, and you make them run behind the car to text their friends.
Or to get get exercise.
That's what I'm saying.
That's right.
It's a workout. Next. Chicago Public Schools program for Cook County jail inmates has got some issues, got some splaining to do with fabricated enrollment, attendance, and course credit data to improve its district rating. This is all according to a report issued yesterday by the school system's inspector general. I didn't know this was going on. This all falls under the purview of Tom Dart. Mm-hmm. I don't know who runs the program. We got more sniffing around to do on this, but obviously you don't need to be faking numbers for inmates, whether or not they're getting schooling to get money paid to you so you can help a program that's not being administered correctly.
You know what they need? Online courses from Rod Blagojevich, because he teaches GED classes.
American history.
There you go.
American history, history with Professor Rod.
Yeah.
Again, this. I think we're doing like a top eight today. Lake County set to become the first county in Illinois to raise the minimum age to buy cigarettes to 21, and that includes electronic cigarettes. Anyone? Issues? Anyone?
I'm
good
fine with that?
With that. And then there's this. Edith Windsor. Edith Windsor has died. She's a gay rights activist, lead plaintiff in a case that led the Supreme Court to grant federal recognition to same-sex married couples, and a hero for that. She was 88 years old. Rest in peace. Big story next on 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
We're just talking about this Equifax mess off the air. And before anybody jumps in the class action lawsuit line, where the lawyers get rich and you don't, it continues to be amazing to me. And really, it's because there's too much access to too much news. You can only cover so much, but this, I don't have a sense that we are even remotely close to what the truth is in this story. And the truth, by definition, to me, would be what happened. How did it happen, and what do we need to do that's not a new revenue line for Equifax?
Yeah, and we're trying to get Lisa Madigan on this week to talk with us, but she is behind the website, the EquifaxSecurity.com website, and believes that is safe to go. Remember yesterday we were saying, should you enter your information, should you not? She issued a release yesterday saying that the website EquifaxSecurity2017.com is okay to go to. It's safe, and it's
but is that
what
the one
is
that wants
safe anymore?
Is
but,
that the one that wants your six digits?
Yes, that's
okay, well,
the
why
one.
Why are they trying to upsell us on stuff?
I don't know. That's a great question. We'll have to ask her that. They shouldn't be doing that. We can ask Karen, too.
Karen Conti's here. As this story goes on, Karen, we may need some extra billable hours from you.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. But, you know, 140 million people affected by this Equifax thing, and that number may go up.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Incredible.
Yeah.
Thank goodness my credit rating is 7. That's good, isn't it? 7? Is 7 good?
Yeah, it's better than 6.
Chance the Rapper sued for copyright infringement. Oh, don't mess up the good story of Chance the Rapper for me. What did he do?
Well, he apparently, according to a pleading, there was an artist who in 1979 wrote a song called Bridges Through Time, and he is claiming that Chance took that song and played portions of it in a new song that he is now marketing and selling, and he's saying that's copyright infringement. He registered it, and he should either be compensated or Chance should stop performing it and stop selling it.
Abdul Wali Muhammad, formerly known as Eric P. Saunders, filed the lawsuit in Chicago federal court yesterday. If you get to a point where you're filing a lawsuit, you probably believe it's true, and you must have an attorney that believes it's true. Where do these cases usually go? Settlement?
Usually they stop right when you ask for the cease and desist order, you know. And interestingly, this guy, Eric Saunders, the plaintiff, is a lawyer now. So I wonder, you know, if he's representing himself. He probably is. These things are very expensive, but normally speaking, if you take someone else's work and you are selling it, usually you stop, or what you do in these cases is you cut a deal with Saunders. You say, listen, I'm making money on it. I'll cut you in a certain percent. We'll all make money. You're not going to make any money with that song. You never did since 1979. And then you just go your merry way.
That's the thing, because you're not going to be giving away all the money. You got a song that's, almost 40 years old that nobody knows. I mean, I was a disc jockey shortly after that, and I don't know the song. I don't think I ever played it. I don't know that I've ever heard it. So you probably call Eric P. Saunders and go, I'll give you $250, and you can tell anybody you're my best friend, and it's probably over.
Yeah, no, and those things should be settled. But if he's going to hold out for it, there's a lot of damages. You get the attorney's fees, treble damages. You get lost profits. I mean, it can be in the millions of dollars. So
In all likelihood, Chance the Rapper, and look, I don't know Chance, but in all likelihood, Chance the Rapper wasn't in a meeting where they said, how can we screw Eric P. Saunders, the guy from 1979? You know, there's people who, producers who bring him samples and different things. There's got to be somebody in your organization who says, we need rights fees discussed on this or that, and doesn't
that
just do a clean lift.
Yeah, that happens all the time. In fact, Lady Gaga was sued over a riff in a song that sounded eerily familiar, and it was a person in Chicago who actually wrote that song. And again, it wasn't Lady Gaga who said, I'm going to steal music. It was someone who brought it to her. So, yeah, these things happen all the time.
Well, Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye's family sued because of What's Going On, and Alan Thicke's kid, Robin Thicke.
Robin Thicke.
What was the song?
Blurred Lines.
Blurred Lines. Blurred Lines doing a little bit of thievery, even though I still didn't hear that. It's funny when you all these lawsuits, when they come up, they play the old clip and the new clip, and you go, I don't know. But juries decide how they decide. So good luck, Chance.
Yeah, there's experts that are saying this is the rhythm, this sounds like the melody, this sounds like the harmony. I mean, and they will tell you, yes, this is a copied riff. So, yeah, the people that you can hire to say that.
Moving on to the disaster of Irma, is there any legal stuff going on that people can take action on here? I mean, I don't think you can sue Irma, can you? Can you?
No, I just think it's amazing, though, what kind of legal problems these people are having and are going to have. I mean, you know, do you have to pay your mortgage when you don't have a house anymore? You know, how do you apply for insurance coverage? Does flood insurance cover all of this stuff? What about when your car gets destroyed? Is that car insurance or flood insurance? You know, can you be evicted from your home if you're not there anymore? What does a landlord have to do with your personal belongings if you're missing? Can you be fired from a job for not showing up because you don't have a house and you're staying somewhere else because of the flood? I mean, all of these issues are going to be really important to the people in these affected areas. And I see lawyers are stepping up and volunteering their services, which I find it's really, really nice.
Isn't this the force majeure, am I pronouncing that right, clause that you see in a lot of contracts, like an act of God prevented me from doing this or that, so I don't have to pay my rent or my mortgage?
Yeah, I think that's going to come into effect to some extent, but you're still going to have legal problems here. You know, I mean, you can't expect a landlord who's paying a mortgage, you know, and not getting rent from somebody, you know, to forgive him and still keep his apartment open. So, you know, it's a trickle-down effect. Everyone gets affected. I mean,
totally agree.
You know, are people going to go to school? What are the legalities of not going to school for a month? What are student loans forgiven? Probably not. But I mean, you know, we're going to have all of these different issues that people are going to need to know what their rights are.
Andre was going to bring something up, which I thought was interesting this week. Karen, I know that you and I don't agree on the Rod Blagojevich thing. You are soft and you'd like to have him get out tomorrow. And of course you're wrong about that.
I kind of agree with Andre on Karen's side.
Andre is wrong about that.
Yeah.
And because you're both wrong, I think we should double his sentence. But having said that, he's out this week and he's talking. Before Andre asks you the question, have you seen any of the comments he's made?
Yeah, I have. I actually have. I'm always interested in the topic of how do people adjust in prison, because as an attorney for 30 years, I've seen many people go into prison and come out, and it's interesting who does well there and who doesn't. And it sounds to me that he's doing pretty well for himself. I don't know if you caught it.
He looks terrific.
He looks great. He's very positive. He's done some of the things that people who succeed in there do. What they do is they keep to themselves. They stay busy. They find God. They find hobbies. They stay out of racial politics. They make themselves useful and try to stay positive. And it sounds like he's doing all of those things and he's doing them well.
So along those lines, Karen, could a judge get mad? I know he has one more. I don't know if it's either the appeal of the second appeal or whatnot, but he makes reference to he has one more shot to try to get that sentence reduced. Could a judge get mad with all this media coverage? Would that weigh into his decision, or would that not be a factor in it if he's basically trying to get public support and appeal to the public about how he's changed?
you know, the judges are not supposed to be looking at any of that stuff. They're looking at the cold, hard law. Did he violate the law? And I think there's still some appeals based upon some new cases that came out that say that this kind of horse trading is not necessarily a crime. And I think he's got a long shot on it because he's been up to the Supreme Court. He's been to every court, and I think it's going to be rejected. But I do think that it's good for the world to see that he is doing well in prison. He's not, you know, a person who's violating the rules. He's getting along there. He's doing the programs. And I think that, you know, that it couldn't be bad for a judge to see that, hey, if we let this guy out, he's done 5.5 years, which is a long time. And, you know, maybe it wasn't so much of a crime. Technically, the judges aren't going to really consider that, but it couldn't hurt.
Got it.
As well as he's doing, why would we want to screw that up? I mean, he looks like things are really cooking for him.
In prison?
Yeah.
That $8 a month?
You know.
I mean, you know, he talks about how, well, you know, he wants to sweep a clean hall. He's enjoying that. His hair looks terrific.
Well, you know, I have to say, one of the things I always say about prisoners, you know, they adapt, okay? They unless you have mental illness or you have problems following rules, you will adapt to your surroundings. You'll adapt to bad food. You'll adapt to loneliness, routine, and all of those things. But what's really hard is the family members who come and visit. And that was part of the interview where Patty and the girls would come to see him, and the girls would cry going home because it was so hard to see their dad in that confined environment, and they miss him. The people on the outside are the ones that suffer sometimes more.
Oh, believe me, I feel very badly for his daughters. End of sentence. I feel very badly for his daughters. Not for his wife, not for him. I'm not sure Rod wants to get out. I think he'd like to get out for a little while, but I think he's super comfortable in there. Plus, he's king of Cell Block C or whatever he is there.
Well, and as much as you look at it and you go, hey, he doesn't have a bad life, it's not a nice life. Well, I mean, you've got stupid rules.
No, obviously,
you know,
it's ridiculous. Of course he wants
to get
out.
Think about who your roommates are. You know, with the guy Jared Fogel from Subway.
Who wants a roommate?
I mean, you've got people who are drug dealers. You've got sexual offenders. You've got, I mean, these are not nice people. And, you know, it's a lonely existence. And he has just, I think he's made a point to be industrious and keep busy, which is good. But it's really not a good place to be.
I just wonder if at any point, I don't think it's been addressed yet in the first two parts with with the Channel 5 piece on it anyway, does Trump come up? Because if I'm Blagojevich and I'm sitting in prison, I'm going, seriously? That guy's president?
Right. Well, he was on
and
the
I'm in jail?
He was on The Apprentice, so it wouldn't be out of the realm for him to ask for a pardon.
Well, interestingly, they cite in one of the articles that Trump has in the past said something very kind of just, yeah, it doesn't sound like that was a crime. It sounds more like politics. Words to that effect. So I think, you know, everyone's hanging on those words saying, well, does that mean he's going to pardon him? It doesn't seem to me that he's going to cross the political party lines and do that. But you never know.
How fitting would that be? How fitting would that be when Trump leaves office? And he will. One of his last things he does is he pardons Rod.
That would be an interesting end to an interesting story.
You go wash your mouth out with soap. Karen Conti, are you on Sunday night?
I'm on Sunday night with Brian Noonan from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m.
And if people want to call you at the office and tell you it's not them, it's their friend that needs help, who do they call and what's the number?
Then call me at 312-332-7800 or kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Right, ready? Yeah. Hey. 712, we continue. It's WGN. Show number 987. At Cochran Show on Twitter. Are you following me on Twitter? Hey, are you following me? Let me ask you a question. Are you following me? What are you doing following me? You should follow me. At Cochran Show. There's a lot of good information there.
I follow you. We all follow you.
Steve Cochran Show, Facebook.com is where you go there. And 312-981-7200. Texters and tweeters. Listen, we're always interested in making sure that you understand that we have a hunger problem in Illinois and here in northern Illinois that, well, many of you may not be aware of. Doesn't make you a bad person. It's just that you can have a neighbor that maybe isn't able to feed his or her family or maybe are hungry themselves. That's why the Northern Illinois Food Bank is ready to kick off Hunger Action Month. And we welcome in studio Jennifer. How do I pronounce your last name?
Now.
Jennifer
like
Now?
Right now.
Okay. Jennifer Now. Jennifer is the Director of Communications for the Northern Illinois Food Bank, and Paul Morello, or as he likes to be called, Palmer, is the Senior Manager of PR there. All right, so Jennifer, Hunger Action Month, meaning what? What type of action are we taking?
You know, it's all about trying to generate awareness for the hunger that exists right in your own community.
You should be on the show then.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah. Because, well, explain. I mean, it's in every community. I mean, there's people in Lake Forest that are hungry. There's people in, you know, it's not just poor neighborhoods.
No, it's in every community. You know, between ourselves and Greater Chicago Food Depository down here in the city, a lot of people don't realize that it could be your next door neighbor. Mm-hmm. So you're right. We're talking Lake Forest. We're talking Naperville. We're talking, you know, out in Rockford. It's a pretty vast issue that we're facing. And, you know, together we're feeding a lot of families year in and year out.
Our building now, my condo building, we now have every, it used to just be around the holidays, but now there's a sign, there's a little room, and if, you know, there's food, you donate, so it's an ongoing thing. And at one point they said we are in need of peanut butter or whatever it might be, canned goods or something. Is there ever any time where you're really in need of some sort of product or something like that? Or is it just everything and anything is welcome?
Yeah, do you have like theme months? January, we need jam.
Yeah, it was a about 6 months ago or so, they said if you have peanut butter. So everybody started bringing more peanut butter.
Well, peanut butter is one of those staples, right?
Yeah.
Good in protein, great mm-hmm. for kids. 6 months ago, that's, you know, at the end of the school year. It's probably what they're trying to get to. You know, we're always happy to take shelf-stable items, but we're also looking for fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, because these folks deserve good, nutritious meals.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. But when you're dealing with stuff that's perishable, what's the best way to get it to you?
You can, you know, drop it off at your local pantry. We both work with a lot of different pantries in the area. Or you could bring it to one of our centers. Paul, do you want to talk about?
Paul, what about potato salad in the summertime and shrimp cocktails? Not so much?
Yeah, so so the Greater Chicago Food Depository, what we would suggest is that if you want to make a donation, a food donation, you need to donate shelf-stable items. You know, so we do food drives all over Cook County, and if you're going to donate, make sure it's a shelf-stable item. You know, Andrea mentioned peanut butter, and yeah, those are the staples. That's the kind of stuff we're looking for: peanut butter, canned soup, canned veggies, canned fruit. Just those things that you need to have in your pantry if you're going to be able to have a nutritious diet. And those are just things that we're always looking for, holidays or not.
Pay it forward for your neighborhood by doing this. By the way, you can make a cash donation anytime on the website, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So in terms of the food depository, it's just chicagosfoodbank.org. And, you know, cash does certainly help. I mean, I think we can make cash go a bit farther than an individual can of food, just because we have purchasing power. And I'm sure this goes the same for Northern Illinois Food Bank. But, it certainly makes a difference as well.
Yep.
What's the packathon?
So at Northern Illinois Food Bank.
Get close to that mic. I don't know why I'm not hearing you well. But get
sorry,
here. That's fine. Now you're great.
So at Northern Illinois Food Bank, we have two upcoming packathons. One is this Friday in Park City. That's right by Great America. You can actually see Great America from our doors.
Okay.
Kicks off at 8 a.m. Okay. So we're really excited about that. We have another one in Rockford at our center out there on the 22nd. So these two packathons, you know, we try and get in as many volunteers as we can. It's all part of Hunger Action Month. It takes.
What are you packing? Boxes?
No. Well, we're packing different foods. We're taking canned goods and putting them into packages that make sense for our pantries to order.
Got it.
So it's much like a retailer where you can go online and order by the box.
Right. So you're organizing. You're making the entire effort more efficient.
Yep. You can look at us and Greater Chicago Food Depository both as a manufacturer, a warehouse, a clearing center.
Sure.
Where we're taking all of this food in and we're able to redistribute it to the community.
And you pack meals for seniors, mm-hmm. back to school programs, correct?
Seniors, kids, families. We really cover all of the different age groups, just to make sure that those nutritious meals are being had. Many of the people that we're serving, they're working families, which I think a lot of folks are astounded by. We're looking at nearly 80% of our families have income of some sort. It's just not enough to make ends meet, and so we're trying to solve that.
Yeah, and God bless them for having the courage to come in and ask for help, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
71,500 jumps out, number of people that get served every week. You know, that's, is that number up or down based on how we're doing this? We know the state's broke.
How is that affecting everybody else?
You know, together, Greater Chicago and Northern Illinois Food Bank, it's about 1.4 million people that we served last year. So we're holding steady, and we've got more work to do. We're not all the meals are not getting out there quite yet. So we're both working very hard to make sure that the right meals are going to the right people in the right communities.
And the holidays are coming up, too. So now is the push.
But this is where we've got to remind people, and this is why we asked you guys to come in today, because this is not, you mentioned at the top, this ain't just a Christmas thing, kids.
Right. And, you know, September is Hunger Action Month, this opportunity where everybody can get involved. Northern Illinois Food Bank has the Packathons, the Food Depository has this campaign called 86 Hunger that people can participate in, or people can go to the website and just find restaurants and buy a certain food item, and that item gets a donation back to the Food Depository. Tomorrow is Go Orange Day. So if you're getting dressed tomorrow morning, you want to put on something orange, be it a tie, a scarf, some piece of jewelry. Orange is the official, unofficial color of the anti-hunger movement. So put on something orange tomorrow.
Are you sucking up to Illini here? What are you doing?
No, not related to
not
University
regional.
Of Illinois.
It's,
no,
it's
national. Yeah, it's
for
a national.
Feeding America.
It's a national Feeding America campaign. So, go orange tomorrow.
And we should mention Pass the Plate as well for local restaurants. Yeah.
So one thing I just want to clarify or help everyone, all of your listeners understand, is there's two food banks in our region. So Paul's from Greater Chicago. That serves Cook County. Northern Illinois Food Bank serves the 13 surrounding counties. That covers all of Northern Illinois together. So
you guys are vicious rivals is what you're saying.
No, we're actually
obviously,
really great partners.
Obviously. Right here, yeah.
No, but you have to partner together or the system would break down. It wouldn't work.
Yeah, I mean, our borders are touching, and we work together on so many different events and opportunities and just making sure that we're getting the meals out there. So Paul talked about 86 Hunger. We do have Pass the Plate, which is kind of like a sister program where there's restaurants out in the suburbs as well that you can go get a specific item, and then they're partnered with Northern Illinois Food Bank.
This is a phenomenal restaurant town, and I hear people ask all the time. They say every night when restaurants close, there's food that ought to be taken to food banks, but there's laws that that deal with that. So Paul, explain to me why that can't happen.
Well, so in terms of the Food Depository, if there are, what we do is for donations, we take food that we know where it has come from, kind of what the supply chain has been. So if we're getting a large food distributor that wants to make a large donation, our supply chain team will work with them and we will make that donation happen. In terms of individual restaurants, if they have, say like a bakery has a bunch of bread that they want to donate at the end of the day, instead of having it come back to the Food Depository, they will call us, and what we'll do is connect them directly with pantry soup.
But there's no real health
chain
and bodies that could go around and collect food from restaurants and make it all work in a healthy manner.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of a
challenge. It sounds good on paper, but it doesn't work in the real world.
Right. You kind of need to do it on a case by case basis.
Got it. Before I let you go, the kid of the week that we do every week, I would say once a month, we hear kids who are trying to raise money to buy food for somebody else and help out. This is a great way to get kids involved in a charitable life, to volunteer or to attend an event or to donate or host an online food drive. This is a great thing for you to get involved with as a family, right? You don't have to do this and go, well, we're not big enough. Whatever scale you do it on, it's helpful, I would assume.
Absolutely. We'll take every single person. Kids love coming and working with us and packing food or going to our mobile pantries. It's really enlightening for them to understand that it might be one of their classmates that needs some help. So definitely, kids, we love to have them help. Families as a whole, we get a lot of scouting organizations, school organizations. I see countless athletic teams from schools come in, which is so encouraging to see that our young population wants to make a difference as well.
Yeah, and what's great about having two food banks in the area, if you live in the suburbs, head over to Northern Illinois Food Bank. If you're in the city, it might be easier to get to the Food Depository. A lot of ways to get involved.
Totally unrelated to what we're talking about here. And give the website out one more time.
So ours is chicagosfoodbank.org.
Or?
And ours is solvehungertoday.org.
All right. Hit both of them. I would assume, like most businesses, you talk to people around the country doing the same thing. How are we going to get food to the Florida Keys? Do we have any idea how that's going to work?
We do. We're paying close attention. I know both of our food banks are in contact. Feeding America is kind of leading the charge for hurricane response for our 200 food banks across the country. So we're getting daily updates from Feeding America as a whole. And I know us in particular, Northern Illinois Food Bank, we've pledged a lot of different food, granola bars, as well as cleaning supplies and water and things like that. So Feeding America is taking all of that information in from us, from Greater Chicago, St. Louis, you know, there's so...
Anywhere in the country.
City, right? And so we're just waiting for the green light. And once we get that, we send our product down. They're taking from the areas closest first because it's quickest. And they're working with a lot of other great partners as well, you know, Red Cross and so forth. So we're definitely a part of that. We're really proud of it. A lot of our partners and our donors are calling us. I know we have a blog going out today that's, you know, clicking on help this food bank directly if you want to give financially because it's more difficult to us to funnel those funds.
But it's typical, right? When the people doing the good work step up when the people need the most, right? The rest of us are going, I should probably do something. But you guys who do this every day, you're stepping up right away. So we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Appreciate the education, too.
Yep, absolutely.
It is, once again, time for you to step up, and we hope you will. Because these guys can't do it alone, and they're here to tell you that. So all during this month, which, again, is Hunger Action Month, help out. Help out your food bank. You know, we know the churches are good at collecting. Mm-hmm. But get on these websites. Sniff around. Start a campaign in your house. Get your kids off the couch for crying out loud. Have them help out. But thank you guys for getting up and doing this.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo!
Woo!
Ow!
Love that money.
I love great TV commercials. You guys love great TV commercials? Yes. It's a commercial for a Volvo now. I'm not in the market for a Volvo. I like my Chevy Tahoe.
White lightning.
But this guy makes me feel for him. Mm-hmm. It's a guy probably my age, your age, Dave.
Yeah.
Right, he's probably not as old as you, Dave. But he's talking about his daughter getting married.
I've seen it. Yeah.
It reminds me of, there's a commercial a few years ago, and I don't remember, and I think it was another car company commercial, where a guy's taking his daughter to college, and he talks about taking the longest way possible so it takes longer. You know, putting off the dropping her off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just, I mean, you know, listen.
So sweet.
Didn't take long to get me. Right? Big sap for that stuff. Anyway, that commercial just flashed, and when you're listening to the ADD-addled Steve Cochran Show, you're going to get those kind of references. The reason we play the money song is because our friend Elise Glink is standing by. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. The good news is, and Elise probably doesn't want me to mention this. Okay, maybe she does a little. Her company is on the verge of a major award.
Oh.
Yeah. I believe it's best company ever. I believe that's the wow.
That's it. Ever.
Best Money Moves was named a semifinalist, top eight out of more than 150 plus entries for the next great HR tech company. What's an HR tech company?
Well, human resources. Yep. So people who look for people to run companies like ours and others. And they actually have a conference just for the technology of it. What's interesting is when you dig kind of deep into how HR functions, you know, everybody's afraid of the HR people, and they don't want to go talk to them because they're always afraid they're going to get something written up in their report. But that industry has really coalesced around some interesting technology over the years, and now, you know, the titans, the tech titans of 1871 and Silicon Valley and other places around the country have looked at this industry as being a place that you can just sort of get rid of paper, add technology, and make everybody a little bit more efficient.
Let me brag about your company here. Best Money Moves. This is from a guy named Steve Bose, I believe is how you pronounce his name.
Yep.
Co-chair for this big shot HR tech conference coming up in Vegas. By the way, a bunch of HR people on the loose in Vegas. Ooh, that could get crazy.
It's like librarians.
Best Money Moves is a really sophisticated, smart, intuitive, good-looking platform for people to better manage their finances and get some support from their organizations and helping them do that. I think it's a tool that's really needed, an interesting one as well. That should make you feel very good.
I was actually pleasantly shocked, if I could say that. It was a very, very nice thing for him to say. We're up against some really incredible pieces of technology, including one that comes out of 1871. And it was really an honor just to make it to the final eight.
Oh, stop. It's not an honor.
I want the final
four. No, please. You know, you want the others to lose. You wouldn't be human if you didn't.
No, I just want to win. I mean, well, I wish we could all win, but I want to win.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I want to hear, Elise. I want to win. Here's the good news. You can vote. You can vote. I can vote. I've already voted for your company over 12 million times.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. They were only expecting about 5,000 votes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's pretty big. And where do we vote?
You can go to the blog at, it's a really complicated
You'll
place.
You'll send me a link?
I've got a link. It's bit.ly/votebmm. So bit.ly/votebmm for best money moves.
Yeah, cool. All right. Easy enough. Easier than you said it was. All right. So these poor people in Florida, it's in particular in the Keys, but obviously up into Jacksonville and Bradenton and other places, it's going to be very expensive for the state, for the federal government, obviously for them to rebuild. What is this going to do to housing?
Well, it's interesting. What's going to happen at we saw this in Andrew 20-something years ago when, you know, Andrew came through Florida and basically wiped out all of South Florida. And the first thing we saw is that anybody who had a house that was standing that eventually got back, you know, water and power, which could take a couple of weeks in this situation as well, they jacked up their rent. They absolutely, you know, tripled the price of their houses, and people would pay almost anything to have a place to live as they restarted their businesses and their lives and went back to school. Florida schools just aren't even really open yet. And in fact, some of them, like in Broward County, may just be closed for a long time. So I think we're going to see housing both there and in Houston. And of course, the Keys, I think, might be completely impassable for a long time. You're just going to see housing prices zoom up. And that's not really good news for the people who are there. But the people who are going to work on these houses to rebuild them, they need a place to live, and there isn't anything. And then the people who are trying to live there and restart their lives. So prices up. The other thing that's important to talk about is we already have, we're missing so many thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are tradespeople who work on houses, right? People who do drywall and painting and lay foundations and that sort of thing. This is just going to suck that up even further, and there's a real potential where people could get scammed by people who really don't know what they're doing, rebuild their houses, you know, take their money and then either disappear, build shoddy construction, and they're in a worse shape than before. So there's a lot of construction issues going on right now.
Is there a market for temporary housing here? I know the federal government threw a bunch of trailers into Louisiana and hoped for the best, and some of them were inaccessible, and it really wasn't a well-thought-out plan, but that was 12 years ago. Are we any better at this now in providing temporary housing for people that need it?
I don't think we are. It'll be interesting to see how we're doing. You know, the last 12 years have been very quiet from a major hurricane sort of thing, and now we've had, you know, two and possibly third. Jose seems to be reforming out there, aiming for the East Coast. So two or three within a month is a lot for any country, including the United States, right?
Yeah.
Elise, will this affect our housing market because of what's happening in Florida? Perhaps maybe people thinking of buying a home down there now and obviously can't because of the situation and their plans are now being put on hold. Or should they look elsewhere in Florida because now might be a decent time to buy a winter home?
I don't think it's a good time to buy a home anywhere in Florida. And I just think the prices are going to go out of sight, and then you could wind up in a situation like 2005 and 6 where you need to sell and suddenly prices come back and you're out of luck. In fact, we had dinner last night with a couple, and they were like, wow, this winter we were going down to the Keys to go buy a house. I guess we won't be doing that. Like, no, I guess not. So I think the focus is really for people in Chicago, and there's a huge Chicago-Florida connection. I think you want to look elsewhere. Or just hang on for a few years.
We'll come back. My question after the break that you can think about through the break is this one. Because of the cost to the federal government is funded by who? Us. Is there going to be enough of a pushback on this that you're not going to be able to get flood insurance? You're not going to be able to get automatic FEMA help going forward? In other words, the big question here, God bless all of them, but why are we paying for people to live in paradise when paradise goes to hell? That's a question that's out there, and I don't know the fair answer to that, but we'll come back and answer it in a second. Elise Glink's on the phone, and her company is just a bunch of big shots now. Best Money Moves, and you can vote for them as the next great HR tech company, and then Elise gets a cool trophy. Now, what do you get if you win?
Well, if I make it to the Final Four, I get to go up on stage in front of 6,000 HR executives.
Again, a wild crowd.
A wild crowd. And it's at the beginning of this big HR tech conference next month, actually, in Las Vegas. So that's what I get. I get to stand up on stage and brag about all the cool things that our technology does.
Well, good luck. And again, you can vote, and we'll post a link when Elise sends it to us, and then you can vote. All right, so the question I asked you before the break is this, and it's not just me that is bringing this up. And frankly, I don't know how I feel about this, because I feel we're America, and Americans stand up for other Americans when they need us. But if you buy a house in, quote, paradise, and paradise goes to hell, and it happens again, and a few years later it happens again, and a few years after that it happens again, how much are the rest of us willing to pay for?
Well, one of the things that's interesting on the first look, and yesterday was really the first time that anybody was able to get some eyes on what was going on in Florida, what you saw is that the homes that have been rebuilt since Andrew did pretty well. They're built out of concrete. They've got much better technology inside them. They're standing, and they're doing okay. Houses made out of wood that are older, some of the historic Florida homes, bashed because they can't withstand, you know, wood can't withstand any sort of wind at 130 miles an hour plus. And you've got all kinds of debris that's, you know, running into it. And your roof just lifts off. In fact, Sam told me the other day that our roof, which is, you know, as good a shingle as you can get, asphalt shingle, you know, would not withstand 110 mile an hour winds.
Sure.
So
makes sense.
It just wouldn't. So you've got a tornado coming through Chicago. You know, you can batten down the hatches all you like, but your roof's going to come off.
Right.
So, you know, is it fair for us to, you know, pay for all of this? I don't know. It's been really interesting to me, Steve, and I, you know, not to make this political, although we always seem to, but, you know, the hurricanes, the coastal flooding, all this stuff happens in primarily Republican states that have voted reliably Republican for at least the last three or four election cycles. And yet Republicans traditionally have always been about smaller government, less taxes.
Take care of yourself.
Take care of yourself, pull up your own bootstraps, that kind of thing. And yet here they're in a situation, and there were a lot of Republicans who voted against this in Texas, but you know, here we're in a situation where Harvey is going to have $100 billion in damage, and you've got Florida with at least $100 billion in damage. The Keys is, you know, tremendous. And certainly nobody has enough flood insurance. And FEMA is $25 billion in the red already. And this is just going to add to that. And so, yes, we're the ones who pay that. And I actually feel like mixed feelings, like you are, because I want to support everybody down there, and I want to do what I can and donate and all the rest. But I don't feel like, you know, I feel that people have, if they're going to rebuild on the water, you got to take some precautions. And this gets back to that whole flood insurance thing, which, by the way, got wrapped into the Harvey bill and has now been pushed, kicked down the can another 3 months.
Sure, of course it has. Gutless Congress.
It's a tough situation.
I don't know what the call is either, because, you know, you got a major city like Houston. It's almost a forced hypocrisy, because you could say, no, we got to get tough on the Keys. We got to get tough on people who live in beautiful areas who are subject to this kind of threat. But you can't let Houston die. The economy wouldn't allow it.
No, it's the fourth biggest city. It's soon to be the third biggest city. Chicago is in a battle for its life in terms of population right now. And Houston is coming up fast. You know, in Houston, it's really interesting. Texas has very few restrictions for building. You can build anywhere, any way, any kind of structure you want. There's almost no regulations. In fact, the Texas legislature is now debating whether they should actually, I know everybody's going to be shocked by this, if they should actually ask contractors to get licenses. Right now, you basically have no licensing for any sort of contractor in Texas. So they can come back and build your house and have no experience but have a pretty-looking shingle, and there's no way for you to check whether they have any sort of licensing requirements. And Florida actually has some of the toughest ones in the country. So it's interesting to see how each state treats its residents and its businesses.
I wish we had an answer for you, but I think it's a worthy discussion as we go forward from here.
Yep.
Congrats on your company again, Best Money Moves, and thanks for the education as always.
Thanks, Steve. Talk to you soon.
There you go. That's Elise Glink, and we're back with the news next. Dean has some show business to talk about as well, and maybe we get to it. Troy Murray previews the Blackhawks. What do we call Saturday again?
The Training Camp Festival.
That's right.
coming up this Saturday on 720 WGN and, of course, live at the United Center. We'll come back with all that next.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
All right, 8:15. Dean Richards is here. Well, he's not here. He's at Channel 9. How are you?
Steve, theater in the mind. I'm sitting right next to you.
Dean Richards is here. Nah, it's not working.
Enjoying my coffee, looking right into your baby blue eyes.
You're definitely not here. They're still Hazel. Hazel. All right, so Dean just got back from Toronto like 10 minutes ago. Now he's going to L.A. When are you going to stay in town for a couple days?
This is a little bit of a busy time. And yesterday, at the gas station in Northlake, where we were giving away we were offering 80 cent a gallon gasoline.
With
Annabelle Aval. But here's the big headline that came out of that yesterday. After we spoke on the phone from there yesterday, people in the car are telling me that they look forward to this segment every day because they like to sing along with the theme songs that we have.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice that they completely blow off the content.
I don't think they don't care for the segment, but they like the music, though.
Yeah. Well, the DeCoste guy is good. I don't need to tell you that. You're in Toronto. Now you're going to L.A. Why are you going to L.A.?
Going to L.A.
And by the way, the three-headed monster of show business, Toronto Film Festival, Hollywood, California, and the North Lake Shell. Those are the three-headed monsters.
It almost took me as long to get to the North Lake Shell station as it did to Toronto.
I don't doubt it.
I'm going to Hollywood to talk with Steve Carell and Oscar winner Emma Stone.
They are remarkably different looking in this Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs movie that's coming up.
Yeah.
And Carell is Bobby Riggs. He's even doing the voice.
He does the voice. He's got the look, the mannerisms. Do you remember the original Battle of the Sexes?
Yeah.
It's remarkable, really. Both of them really showing off their acting chops with this. The movie's quite good. It's The impersonation sometimes can get in the way of telling the story, but you know, you can really see who these people were layers deep on a movie like this. And they incorporate a lot of old footage, some old Howard Cosell footage and, you know, ABC Wide World of Sports.
Well, it was a huge deal. Yeah. And it's really amazing because in its moment, 50% of the population was more than willing to stand behind Bobby Riggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The stuff Bobby Riggs was saying then,
horrific.
He would get beaten with purses to within an inch of his life if he said it today.
Or elected president.
And he should be.
Maybe elected president.
Well, that's true, yeah.
I can't wait to see this movie. I wanted to get your both of your thoughts on this. I saw somebody talking about this either on Access Hollywood or Entertainment Tonight. We all know what happened. I can't wait to see it. But A lot of people in the younger generation don't know the outcome. And the reporter immediately said, well, we all know what happened. And then he proceeded to tell the ending. I hate that. I mean, I know we might,
even people listening now don't entirely know. Bobby Riggs was a really good tennis player who has passed his prime by a lot of years. Yeah. He also shot his mouth off, and he was more of a showman than a tennis player at that point.
Male chauvinist pig.
Huge misogynist.
He proudly.
Proudly. Kitchen in the bedroom. That's where you all belong.
That.
Right.
And actually, you know, would show up, with actual little pigs.
Yes.
You know, to show off.
That was like his thing. He'd hand them out.
Yeah. I see a WGN promotion coming.
He'd hand out live pigs. So Bobby Riggs keeps shooting his mouth off about how he could beat, you know, there's no woman that could beat no woman could beat me. Billie Jean King was top two at that point, one in some case, and she agreed to the match. It was at the Houston Astrodome. It was a primetime TV event. Yes, Howard Cosell hosted it. Yeah. Listen, we only had three channels, kids.
Yeah.
Billie Jean King eventually won.
That has to be one of the first non-tragedy events that the entire country and really much of the world all focused on at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Now it's sort of regular, right? Mm-hmm. Now we sort of just go to that.
Right.
Because I think that was before. Wasn't that even before, like, the Ali Frazier fights, you know, the other kind of sporting events that absolutely captivated the entire
world? Yeah, but I'm thinking of in two different veins, because what I'm thinking of from what you just brought up a second ago is made-for-TV events, not sports events we're covering. But made for TV events, and I think that was the first big made for TV event.
Yeah, not so much the sport event, sporting event itself, but the circus that was created. Really, maybe one of the very first reality shows.
And a guy that just died the other day, Don Olmeyer, who was battling cancer. He was one of the guys that was kind of the brainchild behind a lot of that stuff. Yeah. He, Rune Arledge,
TV executive,
people like that, you know, who would come up. Now it's standard fare, right? Well, back in the day, if you did a bio package on somebody before you actually showed the action, that was revolutionary.
Yeah, completely. We do it for the Olympics now all the time.
Yeah, of course. Now it's just standard television. So anyway, that movie's coming out when?
So don't tell. Oh, that's going to be open in a few weeks. We've got a few weeks until that opens. But if anybody sees Andrea on the street,
don't tell me.
Don't tell her the ending of this movie, and also don't tell her the Titanic sunk.
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Well, why go see it now?
And the Beatles broke up.
Right. Apollo 13.
And the Cubs won the World Series.
Spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good because this movie is so much more than just the spectacle. It really is very introspective, especially about Billie Jean King. Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff in it that you didn't know, like Bobby Riggs killed a guy.
I love Emma Stone.
His tennis racket, he said, slipped out of his hand.
Oh, yeah. The glasses, the giant glasses that he always wore, were originally a coffee table in his house.
That's right.
That he had fashioned into a pair of spectacles.
And quite a conversation piece. Chance the Rapper's in the news. Rebel Wilson as well. J.J. Abrams, is he coming back to Star Wars? We'll find out. John Oliver renewed for multiple seasons. You don't see that very often. And how'd the Hurricane Telethon go last night? We'll come back and talk to Dean about that after this.
And Dean is sponsored by Hyundai.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Top man. 8:25, back to Dean, live from Channel 9. Who's suing Chance the Rapper?
He is a...
Is it Larry the Litigator?
As it turns out...
Is it Peter the Plaintiff?
It is sort of a litigator. Oh. The guy suing him is a New York lawyer / jazz musician. You don't find that combo...
No, it doesn't happen really often.
...very often.
Your Honor, before I approach the bench, I'd like to play a little something from Al Jarreau.
A guy named Abdul Wali Muhammad, Steve's name before he changed it for show business.
Yep, true story.
Wally.
like on Leave it to Beaver?
Wally Muhammad.
It's just, Abdul Wali Muhammad.
You know, it's weird because June never saw Wally going the Muslim route, but he turned out to be okay.
I think that was Eddie Haskell's...
That was his move?
Eddie X Haskell's influence.
Eddie X? I didn't know you. Well,
it's like
learn something new every day.
It's like a Greek Vlahis Papagannakopoulos, but we call him Dave.
Jim.
They're all GM.
Anyway, so this Abdul Wali Muhammad says that Chance stole music that he copyrighted back in 1979, song that he performed that he copyrighted. That Chance used it without permission for his song called Windows. He's asking for a federal judge to order Chance to stop selling, stop performing the song.
Get out of the business!
And get a real name.
Look, I think, Dean, we ought to explain how this works, because there are a lot of people who are in the line of decision-making when it comes to how a record is put together. So Chance might take samples from a series of producers he works with, and those samples and that music could be fully vetted by people. Chance, I'm guessing, because I know performers, Chance doesn't sit around and go, "Hey, we got clearance on this." Because he assumes that the clearance is gotten. This is generalities, but I believe this to be the case. In other words, someone in Chance's company of people may have failed him in this regard. Though I cannot, and you're an old disc jockey too, I cannot tell you I have any familiarity with the song this guy's talking about. Was it a hit?
As no, as usual, you know, we don't really like to let facts and accuracy get in the way of our.
No, that's a waste of time.
Sensationalistic reporting.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the New York Lawyers song. Honestly, not familiar with Chance's song. I haven't listened to them side by side to see if it's a matter of sampling or just sometimes, you know, there's only so many notes on the keyboard.
Exactly. Sometimes stuff's going to sound alike.
Right. Sometimes that just happens.
Right.
Doesn't mean that he you know, willfully stole the music from somebody. That's something that a court is going to have to decide. I will say this about Chance the Rapper. He's about one of the most original musicians to come out in the last 20 years.
And he's got plenty of money. And for a guy that hasn't been in the business successfully for years, it would have been easy to give him a few bucks to if he thought that there was a legal problem here.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know.
I don't see Chance. I just don't. It's not consistent with his creative, you know, modus operandi. I just don't. I don't see this happening, and I pronounce the verdict not guilty.
I think that's the way to go in this. And I probably should do a public apology here because I think most people remember the story where I stole the song If You're Happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands,
yep,
and changed it to If It Itches and Starts to Swell, It Could Be Infected.
Right.
And
a lot of people don't remember that Steve originally wrote the song Show Your Boat,
yes,
gently down the stream.
Yes.
And then there was a huge lawsuit when another song with a similar title came along.
Yeah, I got to stop stealing music. That's the message. Mm. Rebel Wilson in court as well.
Also, a lawsuit for our friend from the Pitch Perfect movies, Fat Amy, as she calls herself in the movie, was awarded $3.7 million in a defamation lawsuit against the publisher of Women's Day magazine. The articles claimed that Wilson lied about her name, lied about her age, lied about her childhood in order to help her make it in Hollywood. She claims all not true, and the allegations that were published caused her to miss out on several big film roles. The judge agreed yesterday. And so 3.7 for her. No word on whether Bauer Media is going to appeal the ruling. But Wilson tweeted that if it stands, she's going to donate the money to charity. It's not about getting money from them. It's just getting people to stop lying.
It seems like there's pretty good money in this lawsuit game. We should sue somebody. Who do you want to sue?
Well, I don't know.
I think I'm going to go right to the top. Let's sue Warren Buffett. Because he's got a load of
what
dough.
What are we suing him for?
I don't like his look. I think he's. I don't like who he's looking at me.
Is Warren this Buffett. A class action? Can we get on this too? Or is this just you two?
I think Dean and I are the ones that are damaged if you've heard this segment.
And we
it's
want
all
in.
About
it
damages.
It's like an unclassy action, if you ask me.
All right. J.J. Abrams is going to come back direct another Star Wars?
Yeah, they fired the director of Star Wars 9 last week, Creative Differences. And they brought back the guy who kind of revitalized the whole Star Wars franchise, J.J. Abrams, who gave us The Force Awakens. He'll now co-write and direct Star Wars Episode 9. The release date's been pushed back to now December of 2019. I know you're very busy that month, Steve, but make a couple of days to go check out Star Wars 9.
Okay. And you know you have a hit when you get renewed for how long, John Oliver?
3 more years.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, he's in his fourth season right now. Last Night Tonight with John Oliver, which I think is last week tonight,
right?
Brilliantly written show. If only I could remember the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
HBO re-upped him for 3 more years, so he'll be on the air now until the year 2020.
And that's when my contract here runs out, so maybe he and I can finally do a project together.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah. And the celebrity telephone for hurricane relief. Wow, what a panel of stars answering the phones.
Did you watch it last night? It was really amazing.
I saw the clips, man. Everybody was there.
Oprah, Cher, Streisand, Clooney, Julia Roberts, Tyler Perry.
Pretty impressive.
Everybody, literally everybody was there. It's like the biggest assemblage of A-listers in a long, long, long time. All the money going for victims of Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. Justin Bieber was there and was...
He got a new tattoo while he was talking to somebody on the phone.
While he was talking, he got a tattoo.
Yeah, I got another one. And did they call it Tyler Perry's Hurricane Relief Telethon? Because I know he gets his name.
No, Tyler was just on the phone. He did not get the titling credits this time. But I think it's worth pointing out, in addition, they made $44 million, by the way.
That's great.
And you can still donate now if you go to handinhand2017.com. You can donate. Or if you text the word GIVE to 80077, that'll be an automatic $25 donation for people who are literally lost everything during the hurricanes. So they made $44 million. But also, I think it's worth pointing out that the Apple Corporation donated $5 million during this.
That's three new iPhones.
Stephen Colbert, when Stephen Colbert announced it last night, he said that they made the donation of $5 million. He said, which ironically is the cost of the new iPhone.
There you go.
So you're right on the same joke thread with him.
The store next door is finally going to open up in October.
I heard
that. End of the month.
Yeah. I heard that.
Allegedly.
Yes. Albertson Corporation that owns Juul here gave $1 million. Merck Pharmaceuticals, $1 million. The NBA Players Association, $500,000, and said that they would match any pro basketball players' donation up to $20,000. So a lot of corporate, a lot of people, you know, really... You
stepping up nicely.
Stepping up nicely, putting their money where their mouth is. I think it's great. I think it's great.
Larry Potash gave $100 million.
That's right. It was one month's salary.
I was going to say, or a year's salary.
Yeah,
one month salary.
One month's salary.
Exactly.
All right, when are you leaving for L.A.?
I'll be leaving tomorrow.
But are we doing the segment tomorrow, or are you on a plane?
I'll be on a plane tomorrow morning.
I remember when I used to matter to you.
I need to get one of those phones. Remember when they used to have phones on the plane?
Sure.
Where you could just swipe your credit card, and it only cost about $250
That was so to talk 2010.
For a minute. Right.
All right, buddy. Safe trip.
Bye.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
The Training Camp Festival, featuring one of the all-time NHL greats, Lou Manfredini. Lou Manfredini doing the show Saturday morning from, I would assume, the parking lot, Dave. Do we know at the United Center? This is tough because you're not in charge of home improvement, but you're in charge of sports. So I didn't know if you knew exactly where Lou would be broadcasting from.
I believe so.
Yeah, weather permitting, I would assume he'd be in the parking lot.
I could do a live report from our marketing meeting coming up later on this morning.
That'd be great. Break into the Bill and Wendy show with details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The great Troy Murray. Is there a guy? Is there a better guy than Troy Murray?
Nope.
There are. But let's say for the sake of this segment, there isn't. Troy and John getting ready to do, John Weideman, getting ready to do another great season of Blackhawks hockey. Starting with a home opener against the Pittsburgh Penguins, who currently are holding the Blackhawks Stanley Cup. What's the one goal this year? Get it back. All starts at the Training Camp Festival coming up this weekend. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Doing fine. How'd you play the other day? I saw Troy at the Hawks golf outing.
We won the tournament.
Did you really?
Yeah. We were 16 under, legit 16 under.
On three? On three.
Yeah. We never missed a shot. We never missed a putt.
That's tremendous. Who else was on your team? Yeah.
It was a group from Precision Control, Andy Arnold.
Obviously, guys that don't work. They just play golf all day?
Well, pretty much. I mean, I think I'm a fairly decent golfer, and a couple of these guys were better than I was by quite a bit.
What's your handicap now?
I don't have one. What do I need to shoot?
Well, I mean, you're usually what, 77, 8, right in that range?
You know, I was out at Glen Oaks last week, and I had a 74, first time I'd ever played that course, so it was pretty good.
Oh, forget about that then. Well, yeah, I can't stay with you. You got to give me four or five shots now. Maybe six.
You're way better than I am. You're way better than I am.
Oh, stop it.
How come we haven't played this summer? How come we haven't played?
Well, you know, you're a busy guy. Troy Murray is part of the contingent, of course, getting ready for this new Blackhawks season. Is Alex DeBrincat the kid that we probably should keep our eyes on most?
Well, they just had a prospects camp, a rookie camp up in Traverse City, and he had 5 goals in 4 games, scored the game winner in the game last night. So, you know, here's a guy that scored over 50 goals in the last 3 seasons. I think he had 65 goals last year. And, you know, he was a Canadian Hockey League Player of the Year. He's a small guy, but he can put the puck in the back of the net. And anytime you can score goals, he's going to have to prove it, obviously, at this next level or two, the American Hockey League and the NHL. But all indications are this kid's for real, and he can really score goals.
And the size thing, is that a concern to you? I mean, you know, you can bulk up, but you're not going to get taller.
You know, he's not a big fella. I mean, you know, maybe you look at a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, who's playing in Calgary, and, you know, he's a great player. The game's changed, Steve. You guys know it, Dave. You know it. You know, now it's not all about size or anything, the strength. It's about the quickness and the speed of the game. And, you know, he's going to have to fill out his frame. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, it seems like, you know, the smaller players have been able to succeed. And, you know, here's another guy, when you hear what he talks about, that it's always been a factor that everybody said that he'll never be able to make it because he's a small guy. Well, he's out to prove that that's not the way it is. They said that about Patrick Kane, and he turned out pretty good.
Yes, yeah, by the way, Kaner, as you know, Dave, was not a big guy when he came in, and you know, Troy. I saw Kaner at the convention. He's rock solid, man. He looks like one of those Fantastic Four guys.
He honestly, he works extremely hard, and not a lot of people talk about it, but his off-season, you know, training program and stuff, he works extremely hard, and he's...
Well, he's really beefed up. I'm telling you right now, you won't be able to tell it under the sweater, but he has really beefed up this year, I think, more than ever.
I saw some video of him at the golf.
But he's been that way the last little while. I mean, and people don't realize how strong he is and how well-built he is. You know, he's really put on a lot of weight.
He's
done it the right way. And he looks great.
He's totally excited
for the season.
Totally agree.
You had some guys, Troy, who kind of took the step last year, became big contributors with this team, with Schmaltz and Hinostroza and, you know, some other guys
who were part of it,
Hayden. Yeah, I mean, what's the next move for them? How do they continue to progress and kind of become even bigger contributors to this team than they were last year?
Well, Dave, they're going to have to be bigger contributors this year. You know, the game plan going into last year for the Blackhawks was about giving some of their top prospects an opportunity to see if they could play at the NHL level. And I think you got a really good idea of a guy like Tanner Carroll, who, you know, fills a nice role for the team. Ryan Hartman had a breakout season last year in his first full rookie season. You know, Schmaltz is a guy that comes in and he's got great credentials. They wanted to know if these guys could play, because if you just sit them down in the American Hockey League, yes, there's a time for to go down there and to hone your game, get stronger, get understanding of the pro game compared to wherever you come from. But sooner or later, you got to find out whether these guys can play. And that's what the Blackhawks did. They put a lot of young guys into positions last year to see if they could play. You got some good ideas of really what Schmaltz and Ryan Hartman, you know, Hayden came in at the end of the season. You mentioned him, some of the young defensemen. They're going to play a bigger role, and they're going to need these guys to continue their progression the way that they saw from last year. I think Ryan Hartman's the real deal just because of the way that he plays. Schmaltz is a great player, whether he plays on wing or center this year. He's going to play a big role in the top three lines. So there's going to be, you know, some interesting positional play from some of these younger players and how much ice time they're going to get, but they're going to have to contribute. There's no question about that.
You mentioned the young defensemen, and obviously the key acquisition there with the guys that they lost was getting Connor Murphy. It seems like there's a lot of flexibility there for the coaching staff in terms of their defensive pairings. They got a lot of guys.
They've got a lot of guys, but you know, behind Seabrook and Duncan Keith, there's not a lot of experience. Connor Murphy is 7 years younger than Nicholas Hjalmarsson, and they get some cap certainty with his deal that he has 5 years, just under $4 million for the cap hit, which is something the Blackhawks they need to have. They're getting that stability where they can kind of operate like a normal team because they know what's coming in every year. With Brandon Saad coming back in, he's got another 4 years too as well. So you made some moves this summer to change things up. Obviously, nobody was happy with what happened last year in the playoffs, especially when you get swept 4 straight against Nashville. But Connor Murphy is going to have to be one of those guys that's going to play big minutes on the defensive side of it. I don't know what Quenneville and Ole Samuelson, the new defensive coach, have planned as far as their pairings. But I would think, because of the lack of experience that they have behind Seabrook and Keith, that they, you know, they may play those two guys together. But Connor Murphy is also a right-handed defenseman, which they were looking for. So he can play with Duncan Keith on the natural sides. It's going to be interesting. But guys like Michael Kempney, you know, from last year, he's going to have to step up right off the beginning here and show everybody that he can play regular and he can play a solid spot on the defensive side of it. Maybe one of the interesting guys that they have on defense is Cody Franson, that they signed to a PTO, it's a professional tryout offer. He has no contract. He's coming to camp. He's an experienced guy. He's a little bit older, late 20s. You know, is he a better option than some of the younger players? He's going to have to step up right off the bat. But I think that is a player that probably is going to be here during the season. They'll probably sign him maybe after what happens with the Marian Hossa situation after the first day of the year, when they have to look at some cap compliancy going into the season. But they brought in some other young guys that are going to get a real strong look. And, you know, Forsling is a guy that played well last year. They're looking at him to step up again. And you know, all these guys have worked extremely hard. Steve, you were at the golf outing, the Four Feathers golf outing on Monday. These guys are in good shape because they had too long of an off season to work out and get into that shape. So
right. It's
going to be up to some of these young players on defense, including Connor Murphy, to see how much ice time that they get and where they slot in.
It's the training camp festival this weekend. It's Saturday. Lou Anfredini's doing the show from there. It's great for the kids, man. It's great for the family. It's great for you. Maybe you haven't had a chance to get tickets to the hottest ticket in town, Chicago Blackhawks hockey. There's some preseason tickets that are still available. If you get a shot to go to a game, do it. But this is a chance for you to get up close with the guys, including some of the legends of the game like Troy, that you don't normally get. So I hope everybody comes out this weekend.
You know, it's going to be a lot of fun, and this is one of these things that, you know, John McDonough and Jay Blunk and the Blackhawks organization, they wanted to, you know, encourage the fans to come down for those who can't get season tickets or can't afford season tickets or can't make the games, an opportunity on a great weekend, hopefully weather-wise. There's going to be some interactive stuff outside the United Center, as the Blackhawks always do. Steve Conroy and I are going to be on a clinic about 9:30 in the morning. There's a scrimmage that's going to be on after, so you'll see all the players out there. It's a fun atmosphere. Come on down, see what you can, you know, soak in the morning on Saturday, and enjoy a great day down at the United Center.
All the best, buddy. I will be in touch with you about important golf dates before the season gets too deep here.
Well, you better hurry. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah. All right, man.
He's
Thanks.
Got a game to do on Tuesday, by the way.
It's not my issue. Not my problem.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Dave's best friend, Phil Rogers, from NBC5, who he browbeat into submission when he was his boss at WBBM.
Okay, that's not exactly true.
What do you got, a lozenge going on? What are you doing?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry.
Phil Rogers had an exclusive interview with Ron Blagojevich. And listen, I love the people at Chicago Magazine, but Phil got there first. And good for him. And you should read the Chicago Magazine piece, too. Why not? Why not be informed? But I want to play a couple more clips from the Blagojevich interview, because let's be honest, the guy pilfered the state, you know, turned us upside down, should be sued for malpractice for not doing his job along with being in jail. But prison life agrees with Rod. He looks terrific.
5.5 years in the big house.
Part two last night, they got into some stuff of a serious nature about him being removed from office. Here's Rod Blagojevich with Phil from Channel 5 in part two.
Well, I'm fighting, obviously, for my vindication, for, you know, my freedom, for a future, what I believe is right. But I'm also fighting for the rule of law. And the rule of law is the bedrock of a free society. It's not a case where they're accusing me of taking bags of cash personally. Mine's a political contribution case. That's all that's left. Campaign contributions.
See, that's the thing that Rod doesn't understand, that politicians in Washington don't understand, that Springfield doesn't understand. Illicit intent of public dollars when you're a public official is a crime for a reason. You know, the fact that you intended to steal, the fact that you were using your campaign fund as a personal piggy bank, the fact that you were blackmailing people into donating and using the state's resources in your office to do it. Of course you're guilty.
Well, that's like if I'm governor, if I say to you, Steve, I'd love it if you would donate $100,000 to my campaign, and you do. But I can't say, Steve, I'm going to build you this giant complex, a golf facility right on Michigan Avenue and call it the Steve Cochran Facility, you give me $100,000 for my campaign.
Yeah, and we have the tapes. We know what he said to people.
Yeah. Blagojevich,
again, with Phil Rogers, says that he knows the law, and the law in this case was the injustice.
The standard they used to convict me, by lowering in that standard and saying that if an elected official seeks a campaign contribution from someone who may have benefited by his or her administration, that that's a crime, then every former president that's still alive is coming to prison, every governor that asks for campaign contributions, every mayor, every congressman, every senator, because every single day they raise campaign contributions from people in and around the halls of government who do things.
Okay, again, you can solicit donations, but not in exchange for something.
Right, that's the crime. That's the crime. I like the fact, though, that he was welcoming all former presidents to prison with him. Rod Blagojevich with Phil Rogers talking about the fact that he hasn't been rejected by the people.
I would say they didn't reject me. The politicians in Springfield did. They're the ones who threw me out of office. God bless the people of Illinois. I never lost an election. The only election I lost was that second jury, and that was unanimous.
Unanimous? What, you said unanimous, right?
I don't know.
Okay.
I just think there should be a transcript of this that we can give to Trump's lawyers that they can hand to Trump, so when he does the interview with Phil in a couple of years, he can just go with those answers. It's a real time saver. And finally, what about your appeal, Governor?
You can't apologize for committing a crime that in your heart you don't believe you committed. I firmly believe that, you know, he was always on the right side of that line. And I really, truly believe that the government moved the line just to convict him. The judge didn't even give them the courtesy of taking a 5-minute recess to think about what they said. I would never let them put themselves through that if I knew that it was going to be for absolutely nothing.
Patty Blagojevich talking about the kids testifying on their father's behalf and the whole debacle that it is. The amazing thing to me is, and this is the Trump thing too, but we're victims. We're victims. Why would any court in Illinois, why would a sitting judge in Illinois who has no previous history of some axe to grind with Rod Blagojevich, why would that judge risk their career, their reputation, and potential legal action against themselves by going, great day at work, I'm going to go screw the former governor or the governor that's about to be the former governor?
Right, right. If anything, they have to dot all their I's and cross all their T's more than once.
The martyr syndrome. Rod Blagojevich is in jail for a reason. You can argue all day about how stuff the sentence is and whether or not he ought to get out. But the fact is, he went to jail for a reason. He got kicked out of office for a reason. And those reasons were legitimate, well-founded, investigated. He was prosecuted. He got the justice that we deserve.
Even if he thought, you know what, there were missteps or there was malice or negligence or whatever the word might be in the first trial, it was appealed. And then appealed again, and then a 3-judge panel. And then it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, who said they wouldn't hear it.
Yeah.
So you have judges watching judges watching watching judges.
There's a reason you have all those appeals, and there's a reason it takes so long to work through the system. It's over. Man up and do it. You look great. Your hair's holding up. It's 9:19. We're back after this on 720 WGN. September, National Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago and the University of Chicago Comer Children's Hospital are two of the 25 recipients across the country to get the highly coveted 2017 Hyundai Scholar Award. It's a $250,000 grant from Hyundai Hope on Wheels Foundation for their groundbreaking work in the fight against pediatric cancer. Executive Director Zafar Brooks standing by to discuss
the latest advancements, what's happening locally, and these courageous kids and their families, and how you guys could get involved as well. Good morning, Zafar.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fine. And yourself?
I am well. Thank you so much for letting us speak to you and your listeners in Chicago.
I appreciate you being on. There's nothing more crushing than seeing a child that's sick. It's completely unfair. We don't understand it. We don't understand why it happens. And yet you deal with this every day. I mean, you know, it's got to be incredibly rewarding, but really tough at times, obviously.
Indeed. You're absolutely right. I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. And when I see a child who is suffering any sort of an issue, particularly an issue as difficult as pediatric cancer, it just hurts on your heartstrings. It does tug on your heartstrings. You know, pediatric cancer is an issue that affects about 15,000 children in the U.S. every year. That's a child every 36 minutes in this country. Now, the sad news is, unfortunately, one in five kids who's diagnosed with cancer won't survive. This makes pediatric cancer the leading disease-related cause of death for children in the country. But the good news is 80% of those kids can be cured. So our work that we're doing at Hyundai Hope on Wheels is all about trying to help improve the care and treatment for kids with cancer and, indeed, trying to increase the survival rates. And we've been at this since 1998 now, working with Hyundai and its U.S. dealers. Together, we've awarded just over $130 million for pediatric cancer research to hospitals all across the nation.
That's a big deal. And with all the great medical minds and research that goes on in this city, I assume a lot of those dollars stayed here.
Indeed. So we're very proud to work with Chicago, and there's some wonderful research institutions there. You mentioned two in your opening, Lurie Children's, yep, whom we've worked with for a very long time. In fact, Dr. Morris Kletzel there serves on our medical advisory panel and has for several years in terms of grant reviews, as well as Cormier Children's there at the University of Chicago. Both of them will receive our Hyundai Scholar Hope grant this year for September. Those grants are in the amount of $250,000 each, and that will bring our funding to those two centers combined to just shy of $3 million since our program began. So we're very proud to work with them. The work they do there will be in Chicago in September 21st, I believe, presenting those grants to those centers for all the amazing and incredible work they continue to do.
Zafar, you said 80% of childhood cancers can be cured or are cured early on. You said that?
That's correct.
That's so, a remarkable number. I mean, kids have the best attitudes, too. That has to be a help.
When you look at the statistics, if you go back to the 1960s, if you like, when a child was diagnosed with cancer, there were very few options, very little that one could do. And so more kids than not, of course, did not survive. But what we've been able to do since that time, through technology, through advancements in research, the scientific community has really, if you will, using our metaphor, put their foot to the pedal here and have helped to save these kids' lives. And that's why this work is so important, because we know that we can help save lives. And that's what the purpose of the funding we've been able to award over the last 19 years has been, really is to go into that life-saving research, because every child deserves to be able to live his or her life out in a world that's free of pediatric cancer. Let's face it, cancer is a very grown-up disease that no child should ever have to go through. And these children face it with bravery and courage, the likes of which I see, and it inspires me every day. And they're fighting, and they don't give up, and their attitudes are amazing and incredible. And the work the doctors do, the passion they have for this, just warms your heart.
Let's talk about the hope for the future. What sort of breakthroughs are we seeing lately, and what's on the horizon?
Well, I always tell people I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. So I don't like to try to opine on what's happening relative to the research space itself. But what I can tell you is what Hyundai Hope on Wheels has been doing and how we're trying to help. We have three different grant categories. We have the Impact Award, the Young Investigator Award, and the Hyundai Scholar Award. And each of those awards, in the amount of $50,000, $150,000, or $250,000, goes to scientific researchers who are studying the important questions around pediatric cancer. Now, we are not disease-specific, so we fund research in a range of diseases. There is about 180 pediatric different types of pediatric cancers, so we don't particularly pick a particular disease to fund. We invite the doctors to apply for the grant. We have a panel of 11 doctor researchers These are some of the leading pediatric oncologists from around the nation. They evaluate the proposals, and then those proposals are funded based on their ability to have a transformational impact on the diseases, as well as to improve therapeutic care and cure. Now, I'm also very proud to tell you what we're doing next in terms of the next round of grant researching funding from us is we're proud to announce that we just opened up applications to accept our Hyundai Quantum Award. Now, that's going to be a four-year award for $1 million to fund research in the sort of most difficult cancers, the cancers that have the low survival rates, those ones that are the bad guys that keep that 20% statistic where it is. So we're accepting applications for that, and we're looking forward to funding some really great work. And then finally, we are introducing a new grant category, which will be the biggest grants we've ever offered. They are called the Hyundai Quantum Collaboration Award. The Collaboration Award is a $2.5 million research grant. We will award one collaboration award to two or more centers who agree to work together. And those centers will work on those cancers that have, again, very unfortunately bad outcomes, things like the osteosarcomas, the brain tumors, the solid tissue tumors, the acute myeloid leukemias. These are diseases that affect children and for which there are very few options, and the research has not been as complete. So we're hoping to inspire and encourage more research in those areas so that indeed we can increase the cure rate for all cancers and indeed to save more lives.
Please keep up the vitally important work that you're doing and tell people where they can get information on the Hyundai Hope on Wheels events and the continuing effort.
So we invite the public to join us in this fight. You can visit our website at HyundaiHopeOnWheels.org, HyundaiHopeOnWheels.org. When you're there, you can click on our September experience. You can learn about the work we're doing in September. You can learn about the Gold Ribbon. You know, the Gold Ribbon represents pediatric cancer. We in the cancer community hope that one day that ribbon will be as well known as the Pink Ribbon, frankly, and what we're doing there. You can watch videos of children who are brave child cancer survivors, those right there in Chicagoland that we have videoed, and you will get to hear their stories. You can see the doctor researchers and read about the studies that they're doing and the kind of work they're doing. And we invite people to add their virtual handprint to our digital wall of hope. It's sort of a fun exercise where you can go on and click the digital wall of hope. You can post a message. You can upload a photo. You can pick a hospital that you want to vote for, and we'll donate a dollar to that hospital up to $10,000. And then you can share those stories on your own social media as well. So there's a number of ways you can engage with us. You could be a part of our Every Handprint Tells a Story campaign, and you can visit our website. We're very proud of the work that's going on in Chicago, our local dealers and their partnership with the sale of every car. A donation is made to pediatric cancer research, and that's how the program is funded. And that's what has allowed us to present about $8.5 million for the month of September alone.
Appreciate you being on. We hope to reconnect down the road, but thanks to everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much for letting us tell our story to your listeners as well.
You bet. That's Zafar. I believe it's the first Zafar we've had on the show today.
I think it is, too. By the way, this website is so cool. You can go on, like he said, and put your digital handprint on there. And as he also said, it'll give a dollar to Lurie or any hospital that you choose. This is a really
cool experience.
Just take
a second. You'll learn something. Zafar Brooks, executive director, to discuss the latest advancements there. Yeah, put your handprint on.
It's cool.
Why not, right? Coming up, Bones. Phil Mickelson's caddy forever is doing a great job as a commentator now on golf, on Golf Channel and other places. And he's about to get a great honor. So. You will be talking to Soda Tax in a vote that's going on today about whether or not it's going to be revealed for Cook County in one of the most ill-advised moves made in a long time. At 9:31, we're back with that big story after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
To equal the low round of the championship, Mickelson. With a Sunday to remember at the Open Championship. Look how emotional Jim McKay's caddy is, too.
Bones McKay going into the Caddy Hall of Fame. He's going to join us in just a second here. One of the greats of all time. I mean, far and away.
And he just can't get enough of walking on a golf course. And now he's doing a great job for the Golf Channel and NBC. You know, Jim, you could go out and just walk the neighborhood. You don't have to just walk on golf courses. You know that, right?
You're right. I just like that green grass, I guess.
It is a pleasure to talk to you. We have a mutual friend, Dr. Kevin Most, our medical director. Owns condos in Pinehurst, and the last time they opened was at Pinehurst. You and Joe LaCava stayed at one of his places, and he's a big proponent of the Evans Scholarships, or the beneficiaries of the BMW this week, just played in the event on Monday, and he's an Evans Scholar himself that helped him become a doctor. But anyway, Kev says hi.
That's great. Thank you very much.
So as we progress through this and head towards your big night, Caddy Hall of Fame. Not a bad way to make a living, and a sweet honor that is well deserved.
No, I'm incredibly flattered. It's very, very nice of them to think of me in that respect. And caddying's been the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And with what the Western Golf Association does, you know, through the Evans Scholarships and supporting caddying around the country, whether it's on the tour or at a country club, I think they're just amazing at what they do.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of kids able to go to college when they otherwise wouldn't have been able to without taking on a mountain of debt. And in some cases, not at all, because they got the first job, the great job, and got behind it and learned from it. And Bones, you could speak to this. When you're a kid and you caddy, you see grown-ups acting like grown-ups that aren't necessarily going to treat you like their little snowflake child, so you're going to get the real-world view. You're going to get exposed to the honor of the game. I can't think of a better first job.
I could not agree with you more. I think it's the single greatest job a young man or woman could have. I was lucky enough to play golf at Chicago Golf Club last summer, and we had three young lady caddies in the group from Marquette University. And what they brought to the day and just the whole experience, you couldn't put a price tag on it. I think it's the greatest job a young person can have.
As you go into the Caddy Hall of Fame, it might sound like a stupid question, but is it a plaque? Is it a – I mean, I hope they don't give you a golf bag.
I don't know if it's a bronze divot or what is it?
A rake. I mean, it's a rake. They give you a bunker rake.
Yeah.
Do you miss Phil's bag? Do you miss being out there every day? I mean, I know it was time for you and Phil to go your separate ways, and that's all well and good, but you think you'll go and do it again?
I don't think so. At this point, NBC's been just incredibly kind to me, and I've had an absolute blast with them and their team, and I'm still out there with the guys, and while you're not in the game, so to speak, in terms of the juice running through you that you would have with your player every day on Thursday when the tournament would get going, I just love watching golf played at a really high level. And
by the way, you're really good. And I don't say that with great surprise in my voice because I know how much talking, especially you and Phil, have done through the year. So yeah, I know what a golf savant you are. But I'm really, really pleasantly I'm just pleased. I'm just pleased at how good you are at the job.
I appreciate it. I'm trying as hard as I can. I got a lot to learn, and the guys have been great. And I'm trying not to freak out too much when they talk in your ear when you're talking and all that stuff. But it's I'm trying to get there, but I appreciate that. Thanks.
I was wondering what the toughest adjustment would be for you because you are reporting on guys that you have certainly come into contact with, been on golf courses with, been in tournaments
friends
alongside
with.
Friends,
yeah.
Acquaintances, what that part of it has been like.
Yeah, it's. I want to first and foremost do the job as properly and as truthfully as I can. But yeah, it's the great thing about golfers is that they're always pretty honest if something happens to go wrong or they hit a poor shot. So I don't plan on rubbing anybody the wrong way. I'm just going to report on what I see and just enjoy being with the guys. And it's kind of funny because at the Open one day the weather got really, really bad and a couple of guys came over to me and we're talking about how tough it was to caddy and the really cold and the rain and, realizing that I wasn't having to do what they did. I was like, man, you got to be kidding me. I hope it snows out here today. This is awesome.
Hey, Jim, what's the best advice you ever gave, but they never took and you never let them forget, be it Phil or
that's
Curtis
a great
or
question.
Anybody that you
Yeah, that's a great
for.
Question. Larry Mize, Scott Simpson, yeah. Curtis Strange, any of them.
Oh, wow.
I love that question.
I did work for a pro once who shall remain unnamed, I'd have to say. We hit a shot into a hazard against there was some rocks around, and he wanted to try and play the ball out of the hazard. And I said to him at the time, I said, if you try and play this out of there, this ball could hit a rock and come up and hit you right in the head. And he kind of scoffed at that and hit the shot, and it came up and hit him right in the forehead. And kind of, so I got that was one of those ones I got right that I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, but that's one of those where you don't go, I told you so. You right. just keep walking, right?
Exactly. If you want your job next week, you just keep walking, yeah.
Well, listen, you've made a lot of money, and you deserve it. I know you get questions all the time from people about the basics of caddying, but when you get stopped in airports or wherever by golf nuts or not, what's the one thing they want to know? Because they go, how heavy is the bag? You know, what's your favorite round that you caddied for? What do they ask you?
Well, certainly they like, you know, working for Phil, they had questions about shots that he hit, like the famous shot he hit out from behind the trees at Augusta.
Yep.
For years, you know, people were asking what, you know, questions about Tiger, which I totally understood because, you know, we were all and still are fascinated by the guy. And now I'd say it's you get a lot of questions about, you know, these kids, if you will. I hate to use that word. I shouldn't. But, you know, how can these guys like Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth be as great and as borderline dominant as they are at such a young age? Because that kind of thing didn't really happen until Tiger came around.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, you know, I think golf's in a really, really good place now. And as the folks will see that come out to the tournament this week, these young guys are something to behold.
What about the, you know, you mentioned the shot at Augusta. And if you're a golf nut like I am, you remember it well because, you know, Phil did a Phil. He and Bones talked for a while and he put a shot on, was it 13 or 15?
13, yeah.
Yeah, on 13. He put a shot from the pine straw onto this green. It's a really, you know, you can take a shot for four and turn it into a seven with one, you know, mistake. And it was a high risk, low reward type of situation, but he nailed it. But of all the shots you saw Phil hit all the way through, your favorite shot you ever saw him hit?
Well, I would say that he hit the two best shots of his life consecutively. You played the little intro as we were coming back from commercial about his win at the Open Championship in 2013. And on the 17th hole that day, he on this par five straight into the wind, he knocked it on the green in two with 2-3 woods. And guys weren't getting to that hole hitting driver off the tee.
Right.
And I just couldn't – when he hit the tee shot, I was blown – I thought to myself, well, he could hit 1,000 balls from that point and not hit one as far as he just did here in the tournament. And then he stepped up to the second shot and did the same thing again off the ground with a 3-wood from something like 304, 282 and 24, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, me too.
And I remember thinking to myself, I remember after the fact thinking, these guys that play the best golf of their lives on the biggest stage that they'll ever play on, I'm always blown away that they're able to do that.
You got a pick for the weekend at the BMW? You got somebody you love?
Well, I hate to say it again because I picked him at the Open, but Jordan's a great pick this week because it's not a bomber's golf course.
Yep.
And, you know, when it's not a bomber's golf course, that's right up his alley, and he's got to be a little bit peeved that he didn't win either of the last 2 weeks in the FedEx Cup playoffs. You know, both times he had a chance to win and didn't. So I think he's coming in this week with a chip on his shoulder, so I like Jordan.
And Andrea said she, and Andrea's a really good golfer here, but she said she'd gladly caddy for you.
Anytime. Anytime.
Well, I hope she's got a lot of bug spray and she's, you know, there's poison ivy involved and all that. I'm not a very good player.
I'm going to bring my Segway and just kind of carry the bag that way.
Bones is better than he claims. Listen, thanks for all the entertainment. Congratulations on this great honor. Caddy Hall of Fame member. That's got to sound good to you. And keep up the great work on NBC Sports and the Golf Channel.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Now I'll tell Doc you said hello.
Thank you.
9:52, back with Bill and Wendy coming up on 720 WGN.